Huh. It's a heavy verse. So, Ma'iv unto me. Ananyena Bhavena. With undeviated mind. Bhaktim, devotional service. Kurvante, perform. Papa. Okay, Papa. Yay! Those who? Dridam, staunch. Matkrite, for my sake. Chakta, renounced. Karmanaha, activities. Chakta, renounced. Swajana, family relationships. Vandavaha, friendly acquaintances. So, translation, such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world. So purport, by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. A person in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, is also called a sadhu because he renounces everything. His home, his comfort, his friends, his relatives, and his duties to friends and to family. He renounces everything for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A sannyasi is generally in the renounced order of life, but his renunciation will be successful only when his energy is employed in the service of the Lord with great austerity. It is said here, therefore, Vaktim Gurvanti Yedridam. A person who seriously engages in the service of the Lord and is in the renounced order of life is a sadhu. A sadhu is one who has given up all responsibility to society, family, and worldly humanitarianism simply for the service of the Lord. As soon as he takes his birth in this world, a person has so many responsibilities and obligations to the public, to the demigods, to the great sages, to the general living beings, to his parents, to the family forefathers, and many others. It's overwhelming. When he gives up such obligations for the sake of the service to the Lord, Supreme Lord, he is not punished for such renunciation of obligation. But if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the law of nature. So, Mai ananyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti yedritam matkrite chakta karmanas chaktak swajanna bandavaha. So, Omagana Timidanda Shah Gunanjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this verse is particularly applicable because of the time of the year that we're in right now. What time of the year are we in? Pitupak. And what comes after Pitupak? No, Devapak. You didn't know that? You should know these things. I expect you all to be performing ceremonies for your forefathers when you go home today. And then in about a week from now, you should be worshiping the demigods. We're just talking about how in India they worship the demigods in so many interesting ways. They take a Ganeshji, especially in Maharashtra, and they put him like on the beach and everything like that, and they leave him there, and there's like thousands and millions of little Ganesh or big Ganesh deities, and the municipal bulldozer has to come and just bulldoze all the Ganesh deities and put them in the ocean. I mean, it's just like, it's really not good. So that's not even a good way to worship the demigods. Really? They do the same thing? Terrible. So anyway, so we have these obligations. And certainly we do have obligations to the demigods because they're supplying us with heat, light, you know, the functioning of the body, the different life airs, the food, the rain, the sun, you know, there's Surya, there's Indra, and so there's 33 million of them. So if you really want to, we say this in Fiji sometimes, that if you really want to worship the demigods, we have no obligation, we have no objection, but you should put 33 million of them on your altar. You got to figure out which, you know, which of the 33 million. I mean, that's a lot of demigods. And there was an interesting story in the Mahabharata about one man. He wanted to worship a demigod that no one else worshipped. It's an interesting story in the Mahabharata. Because, you know, the other demigods, they have so many worshippers. So he figured, if I worship someone who no one else worships, I'll be his special devotee, and he'll give me more than anyone else. So what he did is he looked up in the sky, and he saw a cloud that happened to be a demigod, and he started worshipping the cloud, and he became very rich as a result. So if you want to worship the demigods, pick some demigod that's not regularly worshipped. He'll be so grateful to you, because he's feeling so much either envy or so much unhappiness because he gets no respect. But Indra gets plenty of respect. It goes to his head. You know, he runs after the women sometimes, like Ahalya, gets himself in trouble. So, pick some minor demigod, please. I mean, I don't know the names of them, but you should pick some minor demigod to worship. So anyway, we do actually have some obligation to these demigods. And what to speak of obligations to family? I mean, our mother raised us, but she carried us in her womb, right? For 9. My mother always tells me that, too, to try to get me to do what she wants. She said, I carried you in my womb for 9 months, and I suckled you, and I took care of you, sent you to school, and slaved for you, and look what you're doing to me, joining the Hare Krishna movement. So she actually even uses that obligation to try to manipulate me. Parents ever do that in Indian culture? I'm sure they do. That's the bottom line. Look, everything I did for you, you know, so you could go to school, you'd go to university, and look, how can you do this to us? Just join the Hare Krishna movement, you know, you haven't become a doctor, because you have become a doctor, but anyway. My mother still wants to send me to medical school at 62. You know, I'll be a specialist in old age, you know. Or, hospice specialist. They'll be giving advice on the deathbed. So, we do have an obligation. We're not denying that. To anyone, I mean, to the country, too. It's like, you hear you're in New Zealand, so you have an obligation to your country, especially. Certain countries, they actually draft you into the army. It's interesting that everybody in the country has to serve in the army. Is it that way in New Zealand, or is it volunteer army?
Volunteer.
But in that certain countries in Europe, it's an obligation. You have to spend 2 or 3 years. Every single set, men, women, not children, of course, but men and women have to spend 2 or 3 years in the military. Of course, they can opt for community service instead. You know, they can actually be like doctors helping people or going to poor areas, but it's 2 or 3 years. They had this obligation. And I remember in the 1960s, there was this war going on in Vietnam, and we had this draft in America. And you have to register when you're 18 with the draft board, and they would call you up, and there's nothing you can do. I mean, some devotees are fancy things they did, like they acted crazy. You know, they'd come in and they'd go, whoa, I got... and then they weren't taken in the army. It's actually quite... Well, some devotees just chanted, like, you know, they're having their interview. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. What do you think about war? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And then... He said, this guy can't fight. He's useless. Then he went back to the temple. Also, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote to the Bhosh, Chandra Bhosh, who was actually getting together the Indian army and to fight against the British. And he said, you know, all the people in my ashram, they're very weak. They're not such good fighters. So they're just like weak sadhus. So in that way, he got out of sending people to the army. So, we have country obligations. I mean, you have to pay your taxes, too, right? You have taxes here? Yeah, big taxes. So, although everyone tries to get out of paying taxes by different loopholes,
You have deductions and things in your taxes, loopholes, things like that. And you, especially if you give to the Hare Krishna movement, you can deduct that, right? Tax deductible. So, and so we got all these obligations here to even like to the power company, heat here, it's coming in power. So, all these obligations, and so it's stated here in the Bhagavatam that we just chant Hare Krishna, no more obligations. No more obligations to your family. Just drop your kids off, you know. Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Is that what we want? You want that. Yeah, I know that. But anyway. But that's not really what meant by this. By this verse. The point is that we have to dovetail our obligations in society in the service of Krishna. It's not that Prabhupada envisioned everyone just dropping their kids off when they started crying, or saying goodbye to their husbands or wives and just like running around just chanting Hare Krishna like some maniacs. Because, first of all, for two reasons. One is the people wouldn't be able to maintain that particular standard of renunciation. To maintain renunciation long term is a very difficult thing. It requires a high level of spiritual advancement. You know, I've had so much experience with like people joining the movement, and they come to me, both men and women, or girls and boys, and they say, please, I never want to get married. I just want to devote myself to Krishna. And I said, oh, yeah. We've heard that one before. Yeah, that's the most common one. Especially, you know, the ladies come and they say, please, Guru Maharaj, never tell me to get married, and stop me if I ever want to get married. You know, even the ladies say that. I've seen that. Even in Fiji, they do that. And sometimes they even get letters from people who are already married, and they said, you know, I just can't stand this guy anymore. I just want to be with my deities and forget about the creep. So, but what happens is that, you know, when the people tell me not to tell them to get married, after about 7 years, it works, 5 to 7 years, they come and say, Gurudev, please find me a husband. Or find me a wife. And then I got stuck in the marriage business, you know, become a matchmaker. I'm out of that business now. It didn't work out too well. So, I just sent them to the internet. You know, there's a nice website, Vaishnava Marriage. Anyway, whatever it is. I mean, I can give suggestions if there's people there, but I don't tell people this is a good person for you, because then, later on, when they find out he has some faults, they'll say, Gurudev was wrong, and they lose faith in me. That's what happens. I can suggest, and then I have to put a caveat on the suggestion that this is just a suggestion. I'm not making any representation as to the fitness or unfitness of this particular individual. You know, all the legal language of the fine print. I have to have a lawyer to write out the draft there. So I'm not making any representation. But it's a suggestion only. It may be bad, it may be good. That's up to you. Okay. So then I'm not liable anymore. So the point is that people do have desires in their hearts. And sometimes out of enthusiasm, the desire may not be so much present in the heart. You know, someone gets really enthusiastic in the beginning stage. I just want to be a sannyasi. You know, if we made everybody a sannyasi and wanted to be a sannyasi, we would be in trouble, because there'd be a lot more sannyasis getting married. We'd have to have a special ceremony, some sannyasi vivaha, you know. You know, it'd just be a special samskara, you know. Already it happened, but, you know, it would be worse. But, so you just have to be practical. You know, people are at different stages of devotional service. Sure, if someone is an absolutely pure devotee, he can be completely renounced. But generally, like Prabhupada mentioned at the end of the purport, when one wants to renounce things, he's renouncing things because it's just like too much trouble. And of course, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that renunciation is in the mode of passion. In the mode of passion, one renounces things because too much difficulty. Like someone's, even in the internal workings of ISKCON, let's say someone's a temple president and they say, it's too heavy for me. That's in the mode of passion. Of course, he could say that, you know, my spiritual life is going to hell, and that would be more in the mode of goodness. So it's not that every time someone wants to give up a service that it's necessarily passion or bad, because some people just get overwhelmed. And, you know, I'm no sadhana anymore. I haven't chanted my rounds in 30 years, you know. I don't even know who Krishna is, and I'm the temple president of this temple. So that happens sometimes. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but it happens to a certain degree. Like that, you get so much caught up in passionate endeavor. Of course, we oftentimes do something called biting more off more than we can chew. You ever heard of that expression before? Like it's a... Children sometimes do that all the time. Not sometimes, but they usually do it. Like they have a big plate of prasadam, and I just look at it and say, how is he going to eat it? You know, the kid's this small, and the plate is this big. Or sometimes we go to the Sunshine Coast, and they give me a plate like this. Kishore has a plate like this big. It takes three men to carry it onto the table. I'm exaggerating a little bit. And then it's really the biggest plate I've ever seen. And then, how can you eat it all? So the children do that. You know, they take more, and they can't eat it, and their parents end up eating off of their plate to finish what's on their plate, or they end up throwing it away. So we do that sometimes in service to Krishna, that we actually, out of our enthusiasm, we actually take, that's called achahara, you know, actually taking on more than we can actually do. Achahara prayasas cha. Prayasas, I mean, prayasas means over-endeavor. Achahara means collecting too much. So we just try to over-endeavor, and, you know, we want to do this, we want to do that, we want to do that, and then what happened with chanting Hare Krishna? What happened with, like, good sadhana? What happened with hearing and chanting? Because that's our primary point, our primary practice, is hearing and chanting, shravanam, kirtanam. And after that comes Vishnu Smaranam and all the rest of this stuff. So basically, yes, so sometimes we have to give things up so we can hear and chant more, or chant enough. Now that should really be understood, that, you know, whatever, you can, Chanaka Pandit, let's see if I remember the whole thing, he said, you can, to save a village, you can renounce the country, to save, you renounce a member of the village, to save a country, you can renounce a village or a city, and to save yourself, you can renounce the whole world. That's a quote from Chanaka Pandit. So basically, our first priority is to save ourselves spiritually. However, we should not use that as an excuse to neglect responsibilities, because our responsibilities are directly connected with Krishna. They're Krishna's service. Like if you have children, it's your responsibility to raise them, not to be good soccer players, you know, to join the All Blacks or the Wallabies. Well, they're not soccer, that's rugby. Sorry, excuse me, I'm not that intelligent with that stuff. But anyway, that's the thing, join the All Blacks or the Wallabies, rugby players. I mean, sometimes we find devotees become soccer moms. You know what a soccer mom is? A soccer mom spends all of her spare time taking the kids to the soccer games. You ever hear that? I'm sure they have that expression here. As well, you know, the mother just dedicated to taking her kids to different games, you know, engaging the kids in different sporting activities that really have very little to do with Krishna consciousness. And maybe all right to sport, but her whole life is dedicated like that. Anyway, so if someone has a child, then it's part of Krishna's service. It's a necessary part. It's an obligation to Krishna to raise the child in Krishna consciousness. And it's an obligation to a husband to raise, not raise his wife, but or assist his wife, or encourage his wife. Force his wife. No, I don't want to use that term. But to sort of help his wife become Krishna conscious, and vice versa, husband, wife. So that is an obligation. As long as it's connected to Krishna, It's not an obligation that one could renounce. I mean, there's some examples in the Vedic literature where things weren't connected to Krishna and a person renounced. I had told the story about Maharaj Anga. He was the famous father of Vena. Vena, he was a bad kid. Vena was used to go to the forest with his friends and kill them all and not come back with them, you know, come back alone. His mother would say, "What happened with your friends?" And he would say, "I just killed them all, Mom." His mother didn't mind because she was the same quality. He said, "Good boy, you know, as long as you didn't get hurt in the process, you know." Then what happened, his father, though, was a good guy. His father was Maharaj Anga. And he was thinking, "This is a horrible son, what am I going to do?" But then he thought, "This is a great son, gives me an excuse to just head for the hills." Aranyat tena gantavyam yata aranyum yata graham, as Chanaka Pandit says. Chanaka Pandit says, if you're at home and your wife doesn't speak pleasingly, then head for the hills. Because you're already head for the forest, because you're already in the forest. You know, like in the forest. Anyway, it's interesting. There's wild animals, so if you're at home, that Chanaka Pandit, don't blame me. Prabhupada quoted it. Don't get angry with me. This is just Chanaka, you know. So basically, if there's no service to Krishna, then what is the use? It's just a temporary thing. It's just temporary. Nasato vijate bhavo, nabhavo vijate satahu. Ubayor api durishtavantas, twanios tadvadashvi. It's just like, you know, the sages say it's temporary, it's unreal. If there's no connection to Krishna. And in the Chatur Shloka it says, Rite vitam napriyeta, napriyeta chatme, tadvidya atmano mayam, yatabhasha yatatama. Anything without connection to me, Krishna says, is known as my illusory energy, which is like a reflection in darkness. It's unreal. It definitely is unreal, because when you die, you forget about all. We were talking about this yesterday. You die, and you forget about your connection to New Zealand, to Fiji, to everything except for, you know, your devotional service. That you take with you. You forget it all. I mean, you had so many births before. It's like we were in Sydney and we did past life regression at the yoga center there at Govinda's, and some people saw themselves with duck feet. Duck feet? You understand? They were ducks. Quack quack. So they were ducks, and other people saw birds. Other people saw themselves as American Indians. Other people saw another person was a cowboy. You know, cowboy, American cowboy. Like riding on a horse. Giddy up, giddy up. So, but how many births do we have, and how much do we actually remember about any of these things, and what is the importance anyway? You know, people always want to remember their past birth, but it's gone. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we don't dwell in the past. It's gone. It's finished. Nothing left of it. It's like a soap bubble that was there and just disappeared at one point. So therefore we want to be absorbed in the sat, the eternal things. And so we are very attached to our obligations. We don't have to do pitapat. You know, according to their system of pitapat, then you don't worship Krishna during that period. It's exactly the opposite of what's mentioned here. And Deva Bhakti, the same thing. You don't worship God, you just worship some demigods. And in Fiji, you run into all this all the time, that your parents or your relatives will criticize you for just worshiping Krishna. It's exactly the opposite of what's going on here. Let's say, just worshiping Krishna, your life is going to become very unfortunate. And if you happen to get sick, let's say you get the flu or something, they'll say, that's because you didn't worship the demigod, the flu demigod. There's actually a demigod for different diseases, too. It's quite interesting. And it's interesting, I was studying that. So, and they say, just see, you join the Krishna conscious movement, what happened to you? It's all because you neglected the demigods. And then another thing is, you know, then people get into all this witchcraft stuff, and Fiji, isn't it? Like if someone is sick, or someone is mentally ill, or ghostly haunted, then you call a witch doctor. And not even an Indian witch doctor. You call it a Fijian witch doctor. Isn't it? And you go, you know, you wait. Whatever they do, you know. I mean, there's a, sometimes in Fiji, we're called upon to get rid of people's ghosts. So instead of going to the witch doctor, they come to us. And what we do, we just chant Hare Krishna. And prayers of Lord Nrisimhadev. You're with us, right? In Mysore, we had this ghost-busting session. And the girl was haunted by the ghost. And we started chanting, and the ghost spoke through the girl, "Stop, stop!" And I didn't listen to the ghost. I just kept chanting, and then all of a sudden the girl opened her mouth, the ghost popped out, and flew by us. And the girl fainted. And it was nice. And then she was cured after that point. So the point is, by the process of Krishna consciousness, it takes care of all these other different rituals and activities that you have to do, even the pinda, or the shraddha ceremony. Now the shrad, you call it shrad, but in Sanskrit it's shraddha. That's the correct pronunciation. That means the offering of food to the forefathers. Even sometimes in India, they offer meat to the forefathers. Did they ever do that in Fiji?
No, but they do smoke and...
Yeah, you see that. Cigarette. Yeah, they offer cigarettes and kava to your forefathers. I mean, do you think he's going to stay in heaven with cigarettes and kava?
I wish to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever see even Indra smoking cigarettes? I mean, even the bad things, the things that caused them to die, the things that gave them cancer, you're supposed to offer to them. Pretty stupid. Yeah, towards the mode of ignorance. I mean, ghosts don't smoke cigars anyway. Unless they happen to be good Cuban cigars. Yeah. Well, they are smoke. When they're ghosts, they're like smoke. So in other words, we don't have to do that stuff. Of course, here's another angle. If you're in a particular culture, you don't want to disturb people's minds. So you may externally do some of that stuff. It's an interesting angle. Because you have to be concerned with the reputation of the movement. So if you're in Fiji and you're surrounded by your relatives, and the relatives say, you know, it's time for the Shraddha ceremony, and you say, no, I'm just going to chant Hare Krishna, then they're going to think you're weird, or Krishna consciousness is a cult. So therefore, you do the Shraddha ceremony and chant Hare Krishna at the same time. Like Prabhupada, when he was installing the deities in Vrindavan, he called for the ritualistic brahmanas to do their thing so the people would respect it. At the same time, he said that the installation was accomplished by the kirtan, the chanting of Hare Krishna. So even though we may not be in favor of these things, sometimes we do them just to not agitate the minds of those who are materially attached. You see, one has to be intelligent in his application of the principle here. You can't just take this verse out of context and just run away from your family, not do any rituals, and because for preaching it's not good, for you it's not good because you're attached and you still have to engage in this material world. And you know, when you become detached, it's a different thing. But even as a sannyasi, you have to be concerned. Maybe not so much with your family, but you have to be equal to everybody. You have to see everyone as your family. That's it. One thing I've seen is different between a sannyasi and people who are married is that the people who are married, they consider only certain people, swajana, the term is used here, as their family. And I'm just dealing with an incident where someone's child got attacked at the temple. And you know, by a devotee lost his temper, you know, whatever. So I'm just dealing with this incident. So what's happening is that everybody is thinking, oh, the poor guy who attacked the kid, he has an anger problem. Oh, we have to take and soften him. And they say at the same time, but if it was my kid, I'd put the guy in jail. And but my consciousness is that every kid is my kid. And that's why, you know, I'm thinking, huh? How can the parents think like that? It was my kid who put the guy in jail. But Because it was not my kid, I'm more compassionate to the guy. You run into that. I mean, that's a definite dynamic you run into when you're managing ISKCON, that people are partial. I mean, that's natural. I'm not saying that as a criticism. But as a sannyasi, we just have to consider everyone equally, not just because he's my relative, we have to protect him, that kid, but because he's someone else's relative, you know, so he's not so important. That's the Swajanath stuff. Like, you know, I go to India and I see the children in Braj, they're suffering, and I see them just like my children. But, you know, the household isn't like that. These are my children, or they're someone else's children. So one who is actually a real sannyasi will consider everyone equally and have equal compassion for everyone, regardless of their family, racial, national distinction. So that's a very important point of consciousness. I'm not asking you all to come to that platform, but I'm just saying that this is what a platform a sannyasi has to have. If someone's a bona fide sannyasi, because if you have favorites, even if you consider your disciples your favorites and everybody else is not so important, that's also Maya. That's also illusion. Because it's part of the same svajana. Like you see sometimes in ISKCON, you have these disciple groups. You know, when they have the meeting, disciple meetings. I've actually told my disciples, not mine, nobody's mine, because they don't listen to me anyway, so it doesn't make a difference. But, you know, to say submissive disciple is an oxymoron. You know what an oxymoron is? That means a contradiction. It's like some hot cold. So, oxymoron. That's an interesting word. You could use that and impress people. So I tell the people who I've initiated that, you know, I don't want to have any disciple meetings because I want to deal with everyone equally. You know, everybody to me is equal. I want to be just as concerned with everybody's Krishna consciousness, regardless of who they're initiated by. It shouldn't make any difference to me. And that's the right consciousness. Because we have, and the consciousness that, you know, someone belongs to me, or it's mine, or it's more important, that's why you have things like the Gaudiya Math, you know, breaking out into different groups like that. But a Vaishnava is compassionate, loving to everyone. It's not a question of mine, I am mine. So the whole point is Swajana. You know, Swajana means my people. So he's devoid of that on all levels. Of that, devoid of that consciousness on all levels, not just the family level, but in terms of all levels, not like even if we're just compassionate with people in ISKCON and we think, you know, the rest of the people are a bunch of dogs, karmis, rakshasas, infidels. That's not one of our words, but coffeeers, you know. Then that's also bad consciousness. You know, any sort of partisan consciousness is all part of that Swajana stuff. So ultimately, we do have to come to that point. You know, yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vana pashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatodam vigigushate. Seeing everybody equally and being equally compassionate towards everybody. However, if someone's married, they do have a specific responsibility towards the people that they're associated with. That's different. They do. You know, it's not that you say to your wife, you know, you're just like all of the women in the world. You know, I have no special relationship with you. It would be dangerous if you say that to her. Wow. You have a special relationship. I'm the one who punched you. you have to have some discretion, you know, in applying these principles. So, yes, we have special relationships, we have special responsibilities, but the vision should be equal vision, ultimately. That's the point I'm making. So, anyways, it's quite a complex thing to apply in the real world. You know, at first glance, this particular verse and its recommendations appear to be very simplistic, but it's not. It's actually quite, it requires a lot of discrimination to apply these things. So, any questions or comments? Psychophysical nature.
Yes. And for example, if you're in a family who's not Krishna conscious and you're the only devotee, you could, you know, engage them in smelling flowers and things like that. That's why you could be doing your thing as a devotee Yeah.
Yeah, you can dovetail almost any relationship. Sometimes one does have to leave. There's the case of Vibhishan. He tried to dovetail that relationship. You know Vibhishan? His brother Robin, our friend. And he tried his best. You know, he tried his best. But, you know, Robin just said, get the hell out of here. And Indrajit was really nasty to him, too. So he just left and he had to renounce completely. That's a rare circumstance. A rare circumstance. And also in the case of Prabhupada, he tried his best. But his wife kept interfering with his preaching, blowing dust in the guests' faces who would come over to see him. And, you know, selling, you know, one day you look at your bookshelf and all the Bhagavatams are there. It's like, huh? Here you wouldn't buy tea biscuits. What would you buy here if you traded your Bhagavatams in? Some material thing. A computer. You know, you take all your Bhagavatams in for an iPad or something. You go to Dorka's house and say, where are your Bhagavatams, Dorka? Well, it's traded them in for an iPad. So, yeah, I would say 99.99% of the time, even if you're with someone who is not Krishna conscious, there's a way to dovetail it. There's a way to dovetail it, like you're saying. Very good point. But that 1% of the time, it's just like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You know, there's a physical abuse or something going on. You just have to get out of it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we all have our limits, yeah. We all have our limits. I mean, even insofar as the amount of service, we were mentioning that we can do. Like, we bite off more than we can chew. So there's a limit to what we can do. And we oftentimes don't think we have a limit. We think, you know, Krishna's empowering me, I can do anything. And then you find out you're just, like, devastated. Yeah.
And on the 16th day, they take out Shraddha, the food and stuff.
Yeah.
And they were doing meat also.
Ooh.
And I left Fiji. I left all my family members. And I told them, you guys can do whatever you want to do, but without me.
Mm. And you're the son, too. So you're an important person. Yeah, you're the elder son, so you're the most important person. The rest of them are not as important in the Shraddha ceremony, because the elder son is. That's good. And the best thing is if someone passes away. Hey, Nimai, Hare Krishna. Haribo. The best thing is if someone passes away in our family is to do some kirtan for them. Like if you really want to help them, then that's the best Shraddha ceremony. You do kirtan or you sponsor an arti at the temple. And the actual procedure is you're supposed to pay for prasadam distribution the day after they pass away. Not that you don't cook, because you're not supposed to cook, but you pay for all the Vaishnavas to take prasadam in that person's honor. So that's the methodology. Although we do have to observe sometimes things just to make peace in society, or else people get really upset. Right? I mean, just like I went to my father's funeral, and it wasn't a Hare Krishna funeral, but I brought Krishna in there, and we preached about Krishna and how he was fortunate because he gave donations to our movement. It's actually funny. I actually preached how my father was a hidden devotee. I said there was a part of him that none of you but me saw. And they were shocked, but, you know, I dovetailed it. And they liked what I said, too. So you have to do things like that. You know, it was a Jewish funeral, so I couldn't have a kirtan. That wouldn't have been respect. But he did get cremated. I wanted to take his ashes to the Ganges, but they insisted that they wanted to keep the ashes in the living room. So he could see his favorite things. And I was thinking, ashes don't have eyes. You know, people don't think logically like that. But anyway, I really want to take at least some of his ashes to the dungeon, but it never happened. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so then I'll ask you a question to answer it. So, what causes us to be intolerant? Yeah, we're attached to the external world, right? That causes us to be intolerant. We have our certain desires. So, how do you get there's another question. How do you get detached? I've told a lot of people to be detached and it never worked even once. So, the way we get detached is Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita is by being attached to Krishna. Just like if you're attached, you know, the whole higher taste type of thing. If you're attached to Krishna's pastimes and light your internal, if you have an internal life, the external life won't bother you so much. Isn't it? Like if you're thinking about Krishna's pastimes, like, I mean, I'll give you an example. So while I'm here, you know, I'm dealing on the internet with so many management problems, which is just like, I just want to take something else. So last night before I went to bed, I had this nice reading of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I just put it on and listened to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I forgot about all my problems. It was just nice. So when you hear about Krishna's pastimes from a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, then you really, it doesn't become so important again, the things of this world. You're just like, you know, so what? So what? You're whipping me in 22 marketplaces. Like Haridas Thakur. Because he was chanting Hare Krishna. Remember, when Haridas Thakur was chanting Hare Krishna, it was different than us chanting Hare Krishna. He was perceiving Krishna's pastimes. His consciousness was not external when he was being whipped. Try to understand that. He was actually seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his heart of hearts. He was seeing Krishna in his heart of hearts. And when we chant Hare Krishna, I don't know what we see, but we don't, because we're not chanting so well. We just like, we're struggling with the mind. You know, we're thinking about our daily problems. We're thinking about the plans, where we're going to go tomorrow, like that. What do we have to accomplish tomorrow? We're not thinking of it. But Haridas Thakur has this whole internal life. And when we develop our internal life, then the other things don't bother us so much, because we have something so wonderful. Like if you have millions and billions of dollars, if you have a $10 problem, it's not so bad. But if you have nothing, a $10 problem is very big, right? Like if you're a poor man and someone steals your last $10, and all right, then it's terrible. But if you're rich, oh, so well. You know, rich people even burn money. They used to like light cigars with money. Did you ever hear about that before? Just that people would show that they're so rich, they would take like a $5 or $10 bill and light their cigarette with it. Yeah, it's a prestige thing. But if you don't have the money, it's not very nice. I'm not saying you should smoke cigarettes or light your cigarettes with $5 bills or $10 bills. But still, because they were detached, they had so much. If we realize how much we have, and like Prabhupada said, the cup is half full instead of the cup is half empty, how fortunate we are. I mean, sometimes we look at the negative, we think, oh, how unfortunate I am, this person did that, oh, no one loves me. You know, like I do sometimes. No, this disciple doesn't listen to me. This disciple doesn't listen to me. I got a note this morning. One of my disciples is smoking marijuana again. You know, well, it happens. I mean, the guru business is not without risks. It's a high risk business. You have to have guru insurance. You know, when you so you get a note like that, and you just think, oh no. I just want to go to Govardhan, chant Hare Krishna, goodbye, cruel world. You know, because it's attractive because we have these houses now in Govardhan. Like, go, you know, we have three houses, disciple zone. I can just go there and just hide out. turn off the internet. By the Krishna goes, well, he's not in this world anymore. He's gone. So, but if you count your good fortune, then the things don't bother you, and then you can actually have a level mind and deal with these things. You're not angry because someone's smoking marijuana, and he took a vow not to smoke marijuana. You know, you don't get angry. That rascal, I curse him to go to hell. If I did that, I'd spend half my time cursing. I have a whole supply of Brahmin threads, you know. Dwarf would have to run the whole school, right? So instead, you know, you just say, well, look at everything I have. Prabhupada's given me everything, I'm so fortunate. I have Krishna's pastimes, I have Prabhupada's books, you know, I'm chanting. So these things are inconsequential. In other words, they're very small in comparison. That's how you can become tolerant. Like that, by seeing that in comparison. Prabhupada also gave the example of when you go up in an airplane, the things on the ground become very small. So when you're conscious, but it's being absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, basically. And that occurs in different levels according to one's advancement in Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, you're appreciating Krishna's pastimes and you're trying to serve your guru. But then ultimately, you take part in Krishna's pastimes. When you come to the Raghunuga platform, Raghunuga Bhakti, you're practicing, still practicing, no part of Vaidhi, but you're practicing yourself, serving Krishna internally. It's not only you're seeing Krishna's pastimes, but you're there. It's pretty cool, isn't it? You're there. I mean, you're not Radharani or Nanda Maharaj or any of those other personalities, but you're assisting them. And you become attracted to a particular individual, a particular ragatmaka devotee, that means eternal, a devotee who has Krishna or the raga in his atma, in his heart, his soul. And then you have this whole thing going on, and the whole world may be falling apart, atom bombs may be falling, and maybe some big conspiracy, the stock market may go down, right? Stock market. That causes a lot of anxiety, isn't it? Stock market goes down, lost 4% yesterday. Yeah, the stock market is, it's just psychological, you know, how, what people think. So, but then there's so many things that put you in anxiety, you know, earthquakes, disasters, terrorism, you know, so many things. But you can just like let it roll over you, you know, just like, I have Krishna. So when you're on a high platform devotional service, more detachment arises because of that internal absorption in participating in Krishna's pastimes. And then you can be extremely tolerant. But even in the beginning, what I advise is people just count their good fortune. You know, what do I have? Not what I don't have. You know, list the things. Make a list of the things that you have. Wow, Krishna Khan, I've been given the best thing. I mean, it's so fortunate. And as far as what I don't have, you know, maybe I don't have so much money. Or not the latest iPad. You know, the sannyasi has iPad 2 and I only have iPad 1. You know, this is just, it's a disaster. You can even get into things like that. Right? Yeah, the latest and the greatest. Or he's driving around a BMW and someone else is driving around a Yugo. You don't know what a Yugo is. That's a car that used to be made in Yugoslavia. It was like a candy. I saw some little car yesterday we were driving. What was that called? It was like this small. What? No, it wasn't a smart car. It was the old. It was an old size. It was a box. A smart car.
It was the Rover Mini.
Yeah, the Mini, yeah. And I was thinking, I'm feeling real compassionate for the people who are driving around today. So, anyway, so we should develop our internal life, and there's no hindrance. I mean, nobody can stop us. Nobody can stop us. No other devotees, no management, or nothing can stop us from developing that internal life. It's there. It's there for the taking at any minute. Okay?
Okay, Nimai, good to see you.
Hello.
Howdy, Bo.
I love this body. I mean, as we understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we have to understand without the body, or else our internal life will be sahajas. But that philosophically has to be understood. But we do have to enter into Krishna Leela. Without entering into Krishna Leela, then we don't become fully detached from this world. I mean, it's one thing to know you're not the body. It's another thing to know the theoretical stuff. But the Krishna Leela has to be there. I mean, was remarking about, you know, I told all the devotees that yesterday or the day before about this devotee in Sydney that we were talking to right before he passed away, Ram Govinda. Maybe some of you know Ram Govinda. So he just passed away like 3 days ago. And I was telling his family, because I saw him right before he passed away, I was telling his family that you have to read Krishna Leela to him because it's the right time. Not, don't read Bhagavad Gita so much because he won't be able to process that. So there's a time, and we need the foundation of Bhagavad Gita, but we absolutely need Krishna Leela to be able to be detached from this world. And we need to have like a life going on that's separate from this life. Otherwise this world will be too painful for us to deal with. Too painful. I mean, too many things are going to happen. And it's not that I'm just some bad person telling you bad things are going to happen. But that's the nature of this world. I mean, there was one person who wrote a book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People, Good Things Happen to Bad People. But my response is, bad things happen to everybody. And also, good things happen to everybody. Because the bad is good. Because it's arranged by Krishna. But there is, you know, what? Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi, Dukkha, Doshana, Darshanam. I mean, that's the nature of this world. It's just painful. Even you have someone like Mr. Jobs, who was the head of Apple Computer. Isn't it? Really, it's practically the number one company other than ExxonMobil. Those who are studying the stock market know what I'm talking about. Number one company, some it would even surpass ExxonMobil. Yeah. I mean, it was even higher than ExxonMobil for a while. And then they go back and forth. So he, you know, top company, everybody wants his products. You know, every other manufacturer tries to manufacture a pad, you know, a slate computer. They go bankrupt, like Hewlett Packard. Isn't that true? You read about those things? Yeah. And they've all lost their money. And you know, everybody wants an Apple, like an iPhone or an iPad or an I this or an I that. You know, Ishwara, I for Ishwara. So everybody wants it. And then he develops his cancer. You know, he's riding high on the wave, you know, surfing. Riding high on the wave, and all of a sudden the cancer comes and he has to resign. You know, right at the peak of his career, the peak of Apple Computer's productivity and sales and everything like that, he's gone. Amazing, isn't it? Krishna does that just when you've made it in this world. See? That's Krishna's arrangement.
Because we need Krishna Leela to meditate, otherwise we have nothing to meditate on. Here.
Yeah, we have nothing to meditate. I mean, you can't really meditate on you're not the body. Yeah, because that's a negative anyway. I'm not the body. Or, you know, I am a spirit soul. But what is the spirit soul? Not only I am a spirit soul, but what does the spirit soul do? What does he look like or she look like? You know, so you got to have something like really substantial. And when you have that, then you get them detached. And then life is so blissful, even if they're whipping you in 22 marketplaces. I'm not saying that I could do that. You know, please, Krishna, don't arrange for that for me. But, you know, can you imagine? Whipped. I mean, that's not just like a little love tap. You know, oh, here's a whip. It's like, whack, whack. And it was with these things called cat of nine tails. I don't even know what that is. The end of the whip. You ever seen a whip?
Yes.
Makes this sound because it pierces the sound barrier. It's like, boom, or like a crack. And that's how you, when you whip someone, that's how you whip someone. Just to tell you, so next time you whip someone, you know. It's like when I was young, we would do that to each other with towels. Did you ever do that?
Yeah.
You get a wet towel, you get the end of it. And then, you know, the boys, they'd run around whip, you know, hitting each other with towels. It was painful. You'd leave welts on the other person's body. My mother had to stop me from doing that to people. So, but do you imagine like a whip in all the marketplaces, you know, whipped by two people, they were whipping Hari Das Thakur, and just, I mean, wow. Of course, it's described Lord Chaitanya took the whips on his own back. But still, you have to be on a really high level to be able to deal with that. Or Jesus Christ, you know, forgive, you know, having spikes put through your wrists. Actually, they were through the wrists, not through the palm. Because they threw the palm, it would have slipped out. But anyway, through the wrists, and just like being conscious enough to say, to pray to God. I mean, I would just be screaming. I mean, I can't even go to a dentist with this being. I just think of a dentist and I start shaking. And then, you know, so that requires a real life, an internal life. Okay, we have to end because we got a lot of things, a lot of visits to do. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.